It's a great story that the Gospels give us as we come towards closer and closer towards the end of the liturgical calendar, towards the end of the church's year. It's really the Christian journey in miniature that's being presented to us. That Jesus and his disciples are on their way to Jerusalem. The journeys across the plains, the hills, down into valleys, and their experience in dialogues along the track pick up many of our experiences as we cover the hills, the valleys that mark our journeys across life. Today we come across the request of James and John to be big time in the coming kingdom, to be it, and allow us to sit one at your right and the other at your left in your glory. They're obviously men who dream. Men who desire, men who want to excel is what we're getting from this request of theirs. The last week, we remember that it was the rich man and his possessions. Well, this week, it's about prestige and power. It's all ego-fed. That's part of what our concupiscence, our fallen nature is, of being able to put ourselves first before God, before others. And that's what we see James and John, even though it's a great request they ask for, that's what they're doing. They're putting themselves first. They're saying, I first, never mind everyone else. And that's not, though, what life is about. Life is more than possessions, more than power and prestige, along with the competitiveness, the rivalry and violence that they generate. That life is about being born again in baptism, being born from above. It's what we seek to celebrate in baptism. That it can only happen as life unfolds, a kind of lived out baptism that Jesus experienced of living out our faith. But that baptism isn't just a one and done thing, that we continue to unpack everything that happened in our baptism for the rest of our lives. So we go and see, as Jesus asked of James and John in the gospel today, can you drink the cup that I must drink? Can you be baptized with the baptism with which I must be baptized? Then in reply, Jesus goes and uses biblical imagery to hint at what lies in store for them. That baptism doesn't refer simply to the Christian sacrament as we know it, but it invokes a biblical metaphor in which going through trials is depicted as a passage through stormy, turbulent waters. Likewise, cup is a biblical metaphor for the faith that lies ahead for the person, that what he or she will receive is from the hand of God. That without realizing it seems what they're letting themselves in for, James and John express their readiness for this, even though they don't necessarily understand what they've just requested, what they've agreed to in response to Jesus. But Jesus goes and accepts their declaration and affirms its eventual realization. As we know that James did suffer that martyr's death, that there were the attempts to martyr John, the attempts to poison him or to boil him alive in oil, and even though he was able, preserved his life, lived out the rest of his life, the only apostle to die naturally. But the allotment of places in Jesus' kingdom, in God's kingdom, don't belong to him to give, but to the Father. The explanation shows that he himself, Jesus himself, is not going about his death in a kind of calculating way. That suffering will be terrible, but that there will be a happy ending of the resurrection. No, he's surrendering his future entirely into the hands of his Father, into the hands of God, whose power and generosity places complete trust, utter trust into the will of the Father. And that those who wish to be his associates must accompany him in this trust as well. And that he calls the apostles to share this trust, just as he calls each and every one of us today still to share in this trust of the Father. And then we go and see the episode of this gospel move to that second act, of that with the understandable irritation of the remaining disciples, that what they see as an attempt on the part of James and John to bag the highest places in the Messianic kingdom. Now, their indignation, though, provides Jesus with opportunity to explain the absolute difference, the absolute cleavage, that there is a 180 difference between the exercise of leadership in his kingdom and the exercise of leadership in an earthly kingdom. That those who have authority in earth use their power to turn everything to their own advantage. And it's on the contrary that those who aspire to leadership in the community of the kingdom of God, in the community of the kingdom of heaven, must think of themselves as slaves of all. The complete reversal of values is what we see takes place there. And one of the most memorable statements of the Gospels, Jesus goes and drives home this point of his own example. The Son of Man has come not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as ransom for many. The last phrase, "for many," echoes the fourth suffering servant song that we heard in our first reading, and that Jesus is going up to Jerusalem to discharge his messianic role, not in the worldly sense of being this earthly ruler that would free the Jewish people from Roman rule, reestablish the kingdom of David, but in a sense specified by the role spelled out in the servant figure, one who enters into pain, suffering of the world, one who bears the sins of others, one who comes to save many. Many is a Semitic idiom, which means all, that he comes to save all in order to bring about for them freedom in life, to ransom them from a life of sin and death. That this is the ultimate depth of service that he as the Messiah performs, not just for Israel, but for the entire world. Somehow, usually through the experience of failure, and through diminishment of some kind, or suffering, or boredom, or depression, we face our limits, that we struggle with how to be that servant that Jesus calls us to be. That we face our limits, our powerlessness. That somehow the insight has to dawn that power, prestige, possessions are empty, that they're illusions, that they're not the real treasure. That they aren't what life is all about. That we need to let go and to become real. That we need to discover and become who we truly are meant to be in the eyes of God. To be that child of God that we have become since our baptisms. And the only thing to do is to accept life with its pains, its inevitable diminishment, the myriad of little deaths that lead up to an actual death. To take it on board, to even embrace it, to learn from it, to let it mature us. And if we're not good at accepting life as it is or accepting death, which is a part of life, and instead some are tempted to cast themselves as victim of "why me?" or rage resentfully against their luck, against their fate. They avoid death, fail to live. That some search fanatically to distract themselves, to run away from it, or to try to protect themselves in that distraction. That some even try to control, to master it, and by orchestrating these crazy, mindless, risk-taking things, that they don't enter into what suffering truly is about, as we know from Jesus. The letter of Hebrews claimed that Jesus became perfect through suffering, that he matured through suffering life and death through facing them, that he chose to accept reality. He chose to live love in a world that is frightened to love. To really love, inevitably caught up in violence and death dealing. They accept the reality of being excluded, the reality of death, and rather than withdraw from his own truth and live authentically, to still love the world, even though they ended up rejecting him. That he trusted God, and in the process, he becomes the source of salvation for all those who attune to their deepest selves, their hearts, to the rhythm of him. That he goes and shows that suffering can be salvific. And that we need to enter into our own sufferings and unite them to Him on the cross. That in baptism, we enter, we have a share of His passion and death. And that as every each reoccurring Eucharist, He offers up us the cup of His blood, shed as the price for our sin and death. That we choose to deliberately receive the Eucharist, the cup that He drank. And with Him we choose to face full on both life and death, not in control, but in the trust of God the Father. That we accept the cup that life offers, the baptism that life presents. That we discover that life always has an opportunity, always has a hope, a trust, and the grace of God.